again to another episode of the Hell Yeah Homeland podcast. This week with me I have Gail. We think Ashley is napping right now, which was not planned, so it's just gonna be the two of us this week. We're talking about episode 7, which is called On Dante, which is definitely a play on words, since Andante means kind of with a slow tempo, and this week's episode definitely did have a slower sort of beginning and middle, and the end was fucking crazy. And of course also the pun of the fact that Carrie ends the episode on Dante. But that's a good segue into what were your thoughts about this week's episode, Gail?
You know, I know after the episode aired, we kind of talked about it a little bit on WhatsApp, but for me, it was like watching the slowest moving car crash. My anxiety just, it slowly ratcheted up throughout the episode to peak anxiety-ness when, you realize that Saul and this FBI gang is going to storm the apartment of Dante. So it was just, my anxiety was really high. I personally enjoy.
Did you feel like it was a car crash because it was bad, or just because it was so stressful to watch?
Both. I felt like you knew it was only going, like it was like the episode was spiraling out of control, like in terms of all the characters.
What like, I mean is like the quality of the episode.
The quality of the episode I thought was high. Okay. The quality was high in terms of just, you know, they've brought everything together now, and now the story's kind of exploding. Mm-hmm. But it was very it was artfully done in terms of there was so much happening, but the tempo was so slow. Mm-hmm. And it was almost just like this rich unfolding of, you know, this next wave of storytelling now that the chess pieces are in position. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, you could feel what was coming throughout the episode, and they wanted you to feel that, I think. That way you had that same unsettledness and anxiety, like knowing that Dante might have been onto her, and then you kind of see her in his apartment. I mean, that just it all just built to that moment,
right? There was never
a feeling, just so unsettling. Yeah.
There was never a feeling during the episode where I was like, this might not end horribly. It's just like you knew it was gonna be bad. I think that I thought that the episode, true to its name, was a little too slow moving. Like, I understand, I think just based on the title of the episode, maybe that was the actual point. It was just like kind of rolling along. It was definitely like the longer it went on, the more you were like, this is going to be so horrible. Like I think the way that the episode was edited specifically related to Carrie and Dante was, it just made, like, yeah, like it gave me anxiety, you know, and Franny too. Like, Franny was kind of the wrench in the equation, because you were like, okay, you know, if Carrie didn't have Franny, none of this would be as bad. Like, it wouldn't be as bad that she, you know, went to the motel and her credit card was declined, and then she gave the clerk, you know, another one that had a different name on it. It wouldn't have been as bad if Franny wasn't there to witness that. It wouldn't have been as bad if she decided to go to Dante's apartment because she didn't have any place else to go. It was worse that she brought Franny along. It wouldn't have been as bad if she went to the Treasury department to talk to his ex-wife if she hadn't brought Franny. Like, all those things, maybe if she had just gone on her own, wouldn't have been nearly as bad. Wouldn't have been as bad if Saul kind of, you know, raided the apartment, you know, and he was sort of carted off, if Franny hadn't also been there. Wouldn't have been as bad if she had sex with him if Franny hadn't also been here. So I feel like that was the theme of the episode. It was like, none of this would be as bad if Franny wasn't here. But the fact that she is, I think, just underlined all of it in like this bright red marker of like, this is not going to end well, because there was a reason that she brought Franny along and that Franny was a witness to all of this. Like, there's there was of course a reason. It was not just you know, that they decided to do. And it's like, no, it's a pattern. And this is leading, you know, as we saw in the promo, to Maggie kind of giving Carrie an ultimatum, you know, and saying, if you don't admit yourself to the hospital and seek treatment for your manic episode, I'm going to take your kid away from you, which is the correct thing to do. But yeah, so I think that I and two, like, the end of the episode was like fucking crazy. I think the end of the episode made it overall like a lot better, you know, beginning with the scene of probably like beginning with Kane calling Saul on the phone and being like, what the fuck are these letters? Like, from then on, I was like really into it. And I think that that kind of leads into the next thing I want to discuss, which is like the Carrie Dante of it all. And, you know, that scene, especially between them, where he's asking her, you know, what did Audrey, who's his ex-wife, like, what did she tell you? Which, of course, we find out that Dante, like, I kind of appreciated what we learned about him this episode, which is that, you know, he couldn't really get over what had happened to him in Afghanistan, and he was especially obsessed, I think were the words she used, he was obsessed with how unfair it was that when he was demoted and brought back to the States after kind of this fallout in Afghanistan, Carrie was promoted. And you were, you know, kind of astutely zoned in on that when it was first brought up in the premiere, thinking that it might have, you know, something to do with the fact that he was not to be trusted. And, you know, turns out that that was actually really important and an important detail of his backstory, which is that he became obsessed with the fact that Carrie, you know, like, the, I suppose, the injustice of Carrie doing something that was potentially a career-ending move and, you know, being in some ways rewarded for it while he was demoted. And he became obsessed with her, which clearly turned her on.
Yeah. Yes.
So, like,
awkward.
Yeah. So, like, I love the scene where they were in his kitchen and he was just kind of daring her to reveal that she knew that about him. I thought that that was such a great scene, and it was really well played by both Claire Danes and Morgan Spector. It was really unsettling, and it was like, what the fuck is about to happen? Because she clearly seemed like resistant to revealing that she knew this, because if she did, then it would kind of end the game that they were playing with each other. At the same time, he was daring her to admit it because he knew that she must know. So it was weird. It was like they both knew kind of what was going on. Neither really wanted to admit it. And it was just this like weird, kinky, like foreplay. It was so bizarre, but it was really well acted. And there's that moment that I sort of pinpointed as I was rewatching that scene specifically, where, you know, she says, or she doesn't really want to admit what Audrey told her about him becoming obsessed. So she kind of sugarcoats it. You know, she said that she would become preoccupied with someone else. She seems really nervous about admitting this too. We don't often see Carrie acting like nervous around other people. She's usually pretty, you know, steely. Well,
I think she thought she had a handle on it, and she didn't. And I think,
yeah, I don't think she expected him to bring it up. He kind of turned the tables. I don't think she was prepared for that.
No, I don't think she thought his ex-wife was going to run to him so quickly and to be so forthright with what was asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think in that moment she's expecting it. And I think that says a lot about where she is. Her mental state, I thought, was so important throughout this episode. She's clearly in a manic state. The way Claire Danes plays her and does this thing with her mouth, she was doing kind of towards the end of last episode, and it just seemed like throughout this episode she kept doing it, and then, you know, the snapping at Franny and the huffing and you know, the hands through the hair, and just kind of, you could tell she's she's unraveling and mm-hmm. not being able to remember where she parked her car. And right. I mean, she was just very much, she's not herself. And so I think she's not as much on her game as maybe she feels she is in that moment. She had the big win, you know, with kind of putting this together on the treadmill last episode. And now this episode, you know, she's just not together. So,
but do you think that it's that, or I think that it's, I don't know if I would attribute her behavior this episode to her mania. It seems more like she was pushed in a way, and she had to react to circumstances really quickly and didn't handle that well. And so the two things that kind of shift beneath her, the first is that Maggie essentially pushes her to feeling that she's got to leave. And so now she has to take her kid, which is this, like, at the beginning of the episode where, you know, they're leaving Dante's apartment, and everyone's like, do you want to go get breakfast? And then she's like, oh shit, I have a kid. And like, I thought it was funny that she wasn't just like, oh, I have to get back to my daughter. She was like, I have to get back to the house because my sister's gonna kill me. Like, it had nothing to do with like wanting to be there for Franny. It had to do with the consequence and like being yelled at by Maggie, which of course did occur. And so I think, you know, she suddenly has to deal with this personal life, and she's been trying to sort of shove that down and not kind of deal with that. And she then had to like deal with the fact that like, I have to find a place to stay, and I have to like bring my child with me, and I have to like make this happen. So I think that was the first thing. I think the second thing was that she definitely wasn't expecting the level of, I don't know what the right word is, but they go over to Dante's apartment, and then he's like, okay, I'm leaving now. And she's like, you're not going to stay? Like she, I think, wasn't prepared to like, she wasn't prepared for him, you know, letting them stay in his apartment alone. I think that she probably would have thought that he wouldn't have trusted her that much. And maybe it was a play. Like, maybe he did that on purpose, and maybe he left the book out. Like, maybe he left the wedding album out, and it was a trap to get Carrie to go to Audrey. Like, maybe that happened. Like, I just sort of,
I don't know if it was that thought out. But I definitely think, maybe, if you think back to that, well, so we got an ask in that the question was, you know, when do we think, you know, Dante made Carrie, basically, mm-hmm. in all of this? And I think that definitely, you know, with her and going from Simone's hearing and like kind of wigging out about it to being super cool at the bar that night and trying to get, you know,
her behavior all flirty has been with him, erratic, you know.
Yeah, it's been erratic. And I think, you know, and then he wakes up. We don't know if he's got like this foggy memory of the Blue Hand Group in his apartment mm-hmm. or not. Credit to stand-in Jody Metzger, I think is his name. He actually said that on Twitter, and I'm totally stealing it. I love the Blue Hand Group. So anyway, we don't know if he's got this memory or not of that. So he wakes up with a raging headache, and Carrie's gone. And so when he calls Carrie and she's having this bad morning, I think he's got two focuses. One is to see if she really is onto him, and if her story about, you know, the fallout with Maggie is true, because if that is true, then maybe that's why she left, or, you right. know, like, I mean, I think he's trying to kind of suss out what's going on.
I think that's right, too. I think that his motives for going over to Maggie's house weren't altruistic at all. I think he was definitely suspicious of like what's going on here. You know, did she really have this fallout with her sister? I think you're exactly right. He needed to check that out and, you know, make sure that actually happened and she wasn't just manufacturing a reason to get into his apartment. You know, I wouldn't put it past him to have, you know, strategically placed that mm-hmm. wedding album out, you know, as a way to get Carrie to go to Audrey. Like, maybe he was realizing, okay, I think she might be closing in. I have to figure out for sure whether or not she is. If Carrie wasn't suspicious of him at all, she probably would have never gone and, you know, pretended to be someone else and asked questions about him. So maybe it was a way to be like, the jig's up, it's time to get this revealed. But at the same time, there was this, there's this weird, I mean, he was like, he has this obsession with her, and that's led to some sort of sexual attraction as well. And Carrie clearly reciprocates that. There's something about Carrie. She has unhealthy relationships with men. We know that now. She's attracted to men who are not available, to men who, or to men with which mm-hmm. there is no future. You know, that was yeah. part of the attraction to Brody. And why she probably loved him the way she did is because there was never, even if she would, if she, you know, says that she thought about it, I don't necessarily think that she thought that seriously about it, you know, and that was part of the safety, ironically, of wanting to be with him, is that it could never be real, you know, it could never be a real thing. And, you know, how that relates to Quinn and whether or not he was too available for her and, how scary that was. But I also think that Carrie was, you know, aroused and found some sort of eroticism in the fact that he had been obsessing about her, because the way that she reacted when he, you know, when she said that he had been preoccupied with someone else and he said who, she, there's a difference in her, I don't know how to describe it, her reaction. She kind of smiles a little bit, her lips curl up, and she looks at him like, are we actually doing this right now? And she was like, okay, you want me to say it, I will. And then she says a CIA station chief, and then when she says me, it's like she is excited about the fact that it was her, which is so, like, yes, let's state the obvious, that's like pretty fucked up. Like it was the bizarre scene, and leads to this basically like rage sex, which, you know,
they were hate fucking each other.
Yes. Which I don't know, like we've gotten a lot of asks about this over the past 3 days, and they don't seem to be letting up anytime soon. I do think she wanted to have sex with him. I don't think that it was something that, you know, she did. I don't interpret that scene at the end as her honey trapping him, because at that point they both made each other, right? Like there was no trap. She wanted to do that, you know. She wanted to do it against her better judgment of A, him being the mole, and B, Franny being in the very next room. Like, she kind of thinks about it.
Mania too.
Yeah, like she kind of thinks about it, and then she's like, oh, she could sleep through anything. Like, God, I can't believe it. That was dialogue on this show. But, you know, and it's pretty explicit sex too. We've gotten questions about that, of like, it was surprising in that sense, because we haven't really seen any sort of sex scenes like that with Claire Danes before. And like, you know, mm-hmm. the dynamics of that were surprising to me, at least. I was surprised that we saw, you know, a scene as explicit as that. But overall, just like, Carrie had sex with Dante, who was a mole, and how similar is that to kind of what happened with Brody? And is this a retread? And you know, I can't believe she had sex with him, and, you know, she never had sex with Quinn. This is the substance of the asks we've been getting. And I guess what I'd say is Carrie's unhealthy relationship dynamic with men is not something new. It is similar, you know, to kind of what happened with Brody, but also different. It's a reversal, right? Because Dante is the one who's obsessed with Carrie, whereas Carrie was the one who was obsessed with Brody. But I also never felt like Carrie and Brody were like rage fucking. I felt like that wasn't the sexual nature of their relationship. I don't know. This felt like it was interesting. It was really suspenseful when they cut away, you know, from the scene where, Carrie admits that she knows that he was obsessed with her, I was like, what is going on? I was like, that can't be the end of like what we see with them, because it was kind of like a cliffhanger. Like, okay, well, what happens next? Clearly what happens next is they decide to hate Buck. But I don't know. I thought that I knew that there must be something more to Dante, you know, in terms of like how or like why Carrie, you know, because that was the question I was asking a few weeks ago when I wasn't really convinced he was the mole. I was like, why Carrie? Like there's nothing, you know, compelling about her current position that would make her kind of an ideal target. And it did have something to do with the fact that, you know, she was just fired by Kane and was therefore more vulnerable, but it also had to do with the sort of personal obsession he'd had with her, and maybe he was just waiting for the right time to strike. Like, if there was any doubt that he was the mole last week, there can be no doubt anymore that he is, you know, a bad actor.
I will say too, and talking about some of those asks, you know, for me, there's no longer a doubt in my mind that what her and Quinn had was more special. I never really doubted it before, but I kind of love the fact that they didn't have sex now, which is weird because I wanted it so badly for so long. But yeah, like with her tossing it around like this with these fucking shitheads, I feel like it makes it more special that they didn't.
I think it says more that they didn't than it ever yes. would if they did, because
it almost makes it more real because she didn't
Carrie go there with him,
right? Because she's just not capable, I don't think, of having intimacy that means anything,
or maybe physical intimacy, but the fact that, I mean, it's possible that she is, because I do think that their relationship the relationship between Carrie and Quinn was incredibly intimate. They just didn't consummate that relationship.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm trying to say. Right. And I'm so glad.
I don't think it takes any, like me watching the Carrie Dante sex and the fact that Carrie had sex with this person that she like she got some sort of weird sexual attraction to him because he was obsessed with her and because he was not good for her. It's kind of like, Carrie doesn't have healthy sexual relationships. What people wanted between Carrie and Quinn was not what we saw, you know, on Sunday between Carrie and Dante. I don't think. I mean, maybe they did want them to, you know, have that kind of explicit, you know, raw sex. But that's just superficial. That's just what we saw on screen. You can't, you know, the emotions and the psychology surrounding that sex scene is not what anyone wanted between Carrie and Quinn.
No,
at least at the end, you know,
and she's manic, and risky sexual behavior is something that is, you know, can be a symptom of that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The therapist asks her about it after she beats old troll boy. She's like, do you need an HIV screen? I feel like everything that they did in those first few episodes in terms of like kind of symptoms and asking her questions was foreshadowing for some of these behaviors now. So that way we see them. Risky sexual behavior is definitely one of them. And I feel like, I think that's part of it too. Everything you're describing, like he's the mole, he's a bad guy, like he's trouble for her. Like,
it should make her want to have sex with him less. It did the opposite.
Right. It did the opposite. And for me, looking at this, like, I know we got the asks, like you mentioned, about like comparing this to Brody and whatnot. These just feel so different to me. I know I had an ask last week that I answered. I don't think the person liked my answer, but I see them very differently. When Carrie is first watching Brody in season one, she is clearly obsessed with him. He doesn't know that she's on to him in any way. When he first meets her, when she's asking the questions at his, I don't know if it's a deposition or debrief, or I can't remember, maybe a debrief or something, whatever they call it at the CIA. He's answering questions and whatnot. I don't think he realizes that, well, there's no way he could realize the depth of her obsession and just how far she's willing to go. And then when they run into each other at the church, I think he's kind of like, oh, I don't think he realizes he's being played there. I think he's kind of into her. Whereas with Dante, like, he was clearly playing her from the beginning. And it's just a totally different dynamic to me. It was almost like he was the Carrie in that situation and she was the Brody, not knowingly, if that makes sense. Like, she didn't know until that last second kind of who he was. So I don't know. I guess I just saw it very differently. I also think that, you know, her and Brody had this, I think that they had, this is crazy to even go back to this mindset, but I feel like they had a lot in common, like emotionally and mentally. Like when she's in Q&A interrogating him and trying to get him to flip.
That was like, that was beautiful. I think that the the way that they framed that relationship, it was a doomed romance, but it was a romance, and there was something really incredibly profound and really
compelling. And I don't feel that beautiful. With Dante.
No, absolutely not. It's totally right. Like,
and that's what I was trying to say. It's a total very inarticulately.
Yeah, I don't see this as similar to Carrie and Brody, because to me it lacks the beauty of that relationship. And I'm sorry if that makes you queasy or nauseated, but the Carrie Brody relationship was a really beautifully told story start to finish. There were times where it was really eye-rolly, but like the Carrie Dante relationship to me, it just seems just like they, like there's something a little bit more I don't know what the right word is, but it's like raw, and it's
raw and it's dark, and place we've ever seen her.
It's dark, and he doesn't give a shit about her, and she,
no,
like there's something really dirty about it, is how I would,
yeah,
not dirty in a sexual sense purely, because I mean there was something kind of dirty about the sex that they had, but just kind of like dirty and like this is gonna be like
illicit,
yeah, like this, like, is gonna illicit. Be like I don't know what the right word is, but like rough and awful, and you know, I don't know. I'm looking forward though to next week. They're setting up this sort of interrogation where Carrie's gonna break him down, which clearly, I mean, obviously has to bring to mind, you know, memories of Q&A, but I have a feeling it's going to be different because they can't, I think
it's going to be totally different.
They can't just rehash. It'd be too obvious. I don't.
I think they're too. I think they're too many steps ahead. I truthfully feel like Quinn in Q&A has all of the cards, and the way he sets up the interview and lays, like he sets the trap, and you've got Carrie and Saul watching, and she's like, "No, he's good. Like he, you know." He set the table with the lies, and then when he leaves him with that video, like his goose is cooked.
Yeah, you know, but Brody's at the same time,
there's no way they're going to be that prepared going into Dante. There's no fucking way, and
they're not Carrie, because Carrie knew Brody. You know, I forget. Maybe Saul does say this in Q&A, but he's like, Carrie's forgotten more about Brody than we'll ever know. Carrie doesn't know Dante that well. She's just motivated.
She does not.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. I also don't think that it's gonna play out like, I don't. The dynamics are different, you know, and I think that it can't play out the same way that Q&A played out, because it would just be too obvious. To me, it would be too clear of a rehash. I don't really think that they're gonna do that, because if anyone is kind of aware of how great of an episode Q&A was, it's those writers. And so I'm skeptical that they would attempt to, you know, reproduce it so shamelessly, I suppose. All right, so, you know, talking about Carrie and Dante, I think we also, you know, should talk about Carrie and Franny, you know, because they become kind of linked in this episode, because Carrie introduces Franny to Dante, knowing and believing that he is an agent of the Russian government. And we saw a lot of examples this week where Carrie was a bad mother to Franny.
For the record, I'm like shaking my head and you can't see me, but I am like shaking my head as you're talking.
Shaking my head at what I'm saying at Carrie's behavior. Yeah, Carrie's like, okay. It is painful for me to admit and just establish as basic fact that Carrie is a bad mother. And I've gone so back and forth on Carrie as a mother over the years in terms of whether or not I thought it was a good story, whether or not I thought it was a bad story, whether or not I was on board with it, whether or not I thought Carrie was a good mother or a good enough mother. And it's hard to ignore the facts. It's hard to ignore, like, I can't just have, you know, I've been accused of having a Carrie blind spot. I don't think I have really a blind spot with this. I don't think she's a good mother. You know, I think that she loves Franny more than any other person in the world could, and more than she's ever loved anyone else in her life. And we talked about this a few weeks ago on the pod, but the show kind of introduced the concept of Carrie being a mother as being tied up and wrapped around Carrie being able to love Franny. And they kind of linked them. And what I mean by that is, in the very beginning, Carrie wasn't sure that she could actually love Franny. It seemed like, you know, for at least most of season four, she didn't. And that was preventing her from being able to be kind of a good mom, sort of there for her child. She got over that, and it seemed like, you know, when we see her when season five starts, she's loving and she's also a good mother. And that's kind of what we see in season six as well. You know, she's there for her kid. She loves her. She's kind of acclimated to this role, into this lifestyle where her kid, you know, has to take priority over her job, etc. And so it seemed like they were linking those two things, or at least that's how I interpreted it. Is I was like, of course Carrie's a good mother. She loves her child. But what I think the show has done and unlinked this year, and I would say actually probably from mid-season six, is that they've unlinked them. And that's been, I think, the right decision, because they're not linked. I have no doubt that she loves her kid. Also, plenty of people who aren't good mothers love their children. They're just not related. They're mutually exclusive things. But it's just a little bit, I have a little bit of like whiplash, I guess, because I was thinking about this pretty weighty and important storyline and narrative in one way, because I thought that's kind of what the show was doing, and then they sort of turned on me, and so it's difficult to adjust to that. I feel like I've adjusted, because now I can believe both things at once. She loves her kid. That doesn't make her a good mother, and in fact, I don't think she is a good mother. And you know, there is a lot of really charged feelings wrapped up in the way that Carrie parents. And you know, I think I've seen opinions across the spectrum. You know, some people vilifying her for not being a better mother. Some people saying, I actually appreciate the fact that they're doing this, because not everyone is a good mother. And, you know, she can still be a bad mother, but, you know, really fucking good at what she does and kind of what her real passion is, which is fighting terrorism and fighting government conspiracies and all that stuff. But it's just, I don't know, it's really interesting. And, you know, still there's kind of another contingent that's like, I wish that she was a better mother. I wish that they had shown her sort of growing and progressing in this way. And why can't she be both? Why can't she be, you know, a good mother and amazing at her job? And maybe the answer is that Carrie has nothing to do with the fact that she's bipolar. Maybe she's just not cut out to be a mother, and she doesn't have the qualities within herself and the drive necessarily to develop them that it takes to be, you know, that kind of caring, supportive, dependable mother that society expects of her. And it sucks that there are different expectations placed on mothers as opposed to fathers, but that's the society that she lives in, and you know, we can't change that just because we wish it were different.
So I have a lot of conflicting feelings about this with Carrie, because I don't think it's black and white. I she was a good mother for a stretch there. And, you know, like, we don't necessarily see a whole lot of it, but you do know that you're told that there's been this stable home life that she's created for her and Franny in Germany. And that you hear some of the backstory on, and she, her talking with Otto and how she's been sober, and, you know, you know that she's done it for a while. And then even when we get,
we know that she's capable of it. We know that she can do it. The question is, does she want to?
Well, and that's where I get these conflicting feelings, because I think she does at times want to, and at times it's hard for me to even say this. Like, she doesn't. And I think that's my own personal motherhood for me to say that out loud, because for me, I don't even consider that. It's very hard for me to grasp that. And I'm a working mom. I understand what it's like to, you know, try to balance everything out. And, it's difficult, and to be a single mother, and for her, it's even more so. But I find this interesting in terms of Carrie and her family dynamics, because her mom was so absent, and how hurt she was by it. And like that, those scenes in season 4 mm-hmm. with Maggie, when they're on the stoop and she's just like so betrayed that Maggie would even allow her back in her life at all. And then we got an ask about it too, and I've been trying to think about it. You know, I can't see her willingly wanting to not have Franny in her life when she's healthy. I think she's not healthy now, so I don't necessarily trust any decision she's making. But I will say, for the first time this last episode, I've always thought, like, for them to having, you know, one more season after this, I thought for sure they had a Franny issue and they had to get Franny away from her to free them up to tell the story they wanted for, you know, to wrap this all up. So in my mind, I had kind of made a devil's bargain with myself, like, all right, I'm going to be okay with her not having Franny for the interim, but she'll end up with her at the end. Was kind of like this, like, weird agreement I had made in my head. After this last episode, I'm like, holy shit, what if she never has Franny again? What if her...
Oh, I'm not there yet. I think the reason that I'm okay with what's happening is because I'm like, it's just going to be, you know, for the next season and a half.
Yeah, and that's kind of... So that's where I had always been until this last
episode. God, I don't know. Maybe you're right, though. Maybe they are,
and
like...
And now it's gone off the rails for me.
Some people are... Some people have the qualities just within them, they're born with them, that make them good mothers, you know? They're patient, they're compassionate, they're selfless. I don't think Carrie has those qualities innately. She has a ton of other really great qualities that, you know, she was born with and that come naturally to her. I don't think that many of the qualities we associate with good mothers are things that she just has naturally within her, which means that she has to work at it. It's very hard.
And well, and I guess too, like I see it a little differently when I think, and maybe because I am a mom, right. The reality is I think to some degree there's no such thing as like a good and a bad mother. I mean, there is, but I'm talking like, when you are a parent, I think, and Frank says this, 90% of the job is being there. Mm-hmm. And
she doesn't want to be there.
I'm oversimplifying that. I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, you have to actually just be present in order to, actively participating in the raising of these kids.
I don't think Carrie is interested in that.
I think right now, and this is what I kind of said earlier on in previous podcasts, is for me, I think we've seen Carrie, you know, buckling down and being a good mom. And now we're seeing her back at the Abu Nazir type obsession levels here, where she's hunting and she's in mission mode and she's not a good mom. We haven't seen her try to do both at the same time yet. And the little bit we saw in this last episode, she was terrible at it. And right. So I'm struggling.
This episode probably was the first time that we've seen her attempt to do both, and it was a fucking disaster. And that's why
it was a mess.
That's why, you know, it was like watching, you know, a train wreck kind of in slow motion. But I think you're right. It's not black and white. Maybe I was describing it as like, is she bad or is she good? You know, there's a gradient, you know, it's not one or the other. This season, she is on the bad end of the spectrum much more often than she's on the good end. And a part of that is because she's not showing up. She's not there. She doesn't seem to really have any desire to be there. She seems to be ignoring her kid. You know, she's just not present. And I think that being what we would deem a good mother, quote unquote, is something that does not come naturally to Carrie. That's what I believe. I believe that very strongly. I think it's something she has to work at. I think the fact that we've seen it before just means that she was working very hard. It was like a conscious decision that she had to wake up every single day and say, I'm going to be this type of a mother to my kid today. And it was a deliberate choice. And it wasn't just something that came naturally to her. I mean, we saw there was kind of a switch flipped at the end of season four where she was like, okay, I think I can do this now. But that was not something that, I mean, that took a lot of work kind of internally and externally for her to get to that point. And I think that, I don't know, like, I just think that it's difficult to watch. It's difficult to watch her be this way because I know that Carrie loves her this much, and yet she acts this way. And I think that's really difficult because it's like, I wish that she would be better. You know what I mean? And so.
Well, that's what's so difficult in this as a viewer is. For me, I want her to be better.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like this kid. Deserves better. At the same time, it's clear that Frenny like adores her mother and like craves her love and craves her attention. And when Carrie doesn't give it, or when Carrie sort of snaps at her, or, you know, when she brings her into these situations that you know will end really badly, and you're kind of just like, does Carrie see it? Like, does Carrie know that this is gonna end badly and just decides that it's worth the risk? Or is she just not aware? And like, I don't fucking know. I'd like to think that she doesn't understand the risk, but maybe that's even worse, you know? Like, it's just,
I don't know. So, she's just, I think Carrie so operates difficult. Partially. Yeah. Well, and she operates partially, I think, in a perpetual state of denial. I think we saw that a little bit with, like, the thousands of pregnancy tests she took. But I think, I mean, here's the wake-up call that I hope she gets before this is all over.
I have a clarifying question in terms of Carrie operating in a perpetual state of denial. Mm-hmm. You're saying, and I agree that the 30 pregnancy tests that we saw in season three was her denying the fact that this was happening to her. Are you saying that Carrie as a mother is overall just kind of this denial of like, oh, like this isn't really sort of my responsibility?
No. I think no, that's not what I'm saying. Oh, okay. So what I'm, and I think,
because I think that's interesting it. Because if she's just constantly in denial of like, this is the thing that she has to just come to terms with, even though, you know, in the show's timeline, it's been like 5 to 6 years. Okay.
No, I think she's in a denial about things that are hard for her to emotionally handle. Oh, so for example,
well, I agree with that too.
I think she's perpetually in a state of denial, and I really do hope that by the end of the series she has some sort of reckoning in terms of, look, she is Franny's only fucking parent. And
she's Franny's person.
Was a dead terrorist.
She's Franny's like
yes.
She
and yeah. But Franny as a child, and this is what Carrie needs to get a fucking grip on, is that Franny is a child of two people, one who was a terrorist, no matter what the truth was behind the scenes, that is how the world sees him. And, you know, in today's day and age, that you can't imagine that would be a secret forever, truthfully. And it definitely will limit her ability to do certain things within her life if she so chose. Like, she could never be president. I know that sounds silly, but, like, the choices that Carrie has made for her, the sky is not the limit for Franny. And there's a reality there. And if Carrie falls down and can't parent her, Franny has no other parent in her life. Like, I just, for me, this is where I struggle with the show, is I love the spy stuff. I can get super into it. I can talk about it all day long. But this season, this culmination of what's gone on with Franny, is just so personally difficult for me, because I just want to shake Carrie and scream in her face that, like, wake the fuck up. This is a real person with a real life that you have already set off on a bad foot. She already has adversity to deal with, and all you are doing is adding to it. And until someone fucking gets that through Carrie's brain, and she fucking grows up, truthfully, nothing good will happen. And I love Carrie for a lot of things. This is probably the biggest thing I despise her for. And I understand why the show is probably writing it this way and whatnot. It doesn't mean it doesn't bother me any less.
Why
and
do you think the show is writing it this way?
Well, I think they're trying to show, you know, this complicated side of when you are at the level that Carrie is and being an agent, you know, and I don't really want to get into why they gave her a kid. I think it was a story choice in the moment that they've had to live with ever since. But now that they're there, I think when they do these field trips to Washington that we hear about, I think it isn't – they don't just get the feedback like, oh, we're concerned about, you know, the nuclear deal or Russian spies. I think there's also – there's real people they're meeting with, men and women, in the intelligence world that have real lives, that are married, that are single, that are, you know, trying to raise a family. One of them – I've done some reading on. I know I've talked about Valerie Plame a little bit, but there's another one named Gina Bennett. She was part of this group of women that helped take down. Oh my gosh, his name is escaping me. Zero Dark Thirty. The movie was partially based on her.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to think of the terrorist's name. Oh, my God. Bin Laden. There we go. Lord, help me. So, anyway, she is a married mother. Well, she's now divorced, but she was married with 5 kids. And each of her children, when she was pregnant, like, she would be like, that's my Fallujah baby, or this is my 9/11 baby, because all of her kids, like, related to some sort of counterterrorism project she was working on at the time. And just hearing about how, you know, her life was behind the scenes and how difficult it was and trying to be all these things, maybe that is something they're trying to portray in Carrie. So I think maybe that's part of that story. I also think it gives it, like, dramatic effect and gravitas, and it gives her real personal stakes. You are seeing, like, what the trade-off is for her when she is in this mission mode and she is in the hunt. It's at the total expense of everything in her life. And so I think that's partially why they're doing it. I really fucking hope that there's a lesson she learns in this by the end of it, especially with Franny. I can almost live with anything else being a fucking disaster as if they fix this for Franny. It's so unsettling to me that this girl could end up without her mother in her life. And especially after what Carrie said to Franny, or Carrie said to Maggie, about, you know, I'd never want her to see me, like, in a padded room.
In a locked ward, yeah.
In a locked ward, I'd rather be dead. And I was like, holy fuck, like, is that how this ends? Is that Franny thinks she's dead and she's not? Like, Homeland, if you're listening, don't fucking do that. Like, don't make my life ruined by watching the show for how many years to end like that.
Yeah, that goes without saying for me. I want to say that I got pretty emotional when you were talking a few minutes ago about wanting to sort of shake her and, you know, make her grow up and realize that she can't be doing this. There are real stakes at play in this child's life. This innocent child, who wants nothing more than just to be you know, to have her mother there, because you're right, she only has one more parent. And I got kind of emotional thinking about that, because you're so right. Everything you said, I completely agree with. I always want to see the best in Carrie because I love her so much. I love her deeply and unconditionally. And it's hard to watch her doing things that I, you know, believe in my heart to be wrong and reprehensible and, you know, worthy of, you know, being despised. But, like, that's hard. It creates sort of a cognitive dissonance in my head because I have to acknowledge, like, that was bad. I don't agree with this. This was worse than bad. It was despicable. Like, it's hard to have those feelings at the same time, just be like, I love her anyways. Because I do. I love her. And I love what kind of having Franny in the past few seasons, you know, has kind of brought out in her. It's brought out sides of her that I didn't know existed. And I think that it's, you know, added shades to the character that weren't there in the first three seasons. And I think that's been a net good thing. The Franny problem, which is that Carrie kind of has these two conflicting lives and sort of like conflicting personalities in a sense, is challenging, you know, at the very least for the story. And, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about last season and the whole drama we had with Franny and CPS and blah, 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 all that, like...
Well, you know what's interesting is that wasn't warranted. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that, like, was different.
Dar set that right. up.
I did feel differently about that last year because it mm-hmm. felt so unfair. And it felt like she didn't really do it. Like, she made poor decisions, but it also felt like, yes, you're exactly right. It was a setup. You know, her behavior, in my opinion, didn't totally warrant what happened. So it felt really unfair. And it felt like I could rally around her and just be like, this is an injustice. This year feels a lot different. They've given us so many signs that Carrie is not well. Franny is noticing. Like, how many times have they talked about the fact that she keeps asking? You know, she's like, why aren't you here? And, like, why are you always upset? And why doesn't she want to be here? And she's asking questions like, where are we going? And, like, Franny is, you know, cognizant of her mother's behavior, and it's not fair. And, you know, she's an innocent child, and Carrie, you're absolutely right, she needs to grow up and she needs to get a fucking grip and realize that she either needs to, you know, man up or get the fuck out, because it's not fair to her child.
I will say this though, in Carrie's defense, and I don't know if this is going to be controversial or not, maybe I'm in the wrong here, but I will say, like, fuck Maggie and telling Franny a little too much information. Like, I don't know why Maggie in a couple of those scenes has gone out of her way, like, where Carrie's like, why didn't you tell her I was at work? And she's like, well, we don't lie to our children. I don't understand why in that situation
it feels like Maggie being petty.
Drill it home.
Yeah, I feel like Maggie's being petty. And because she's resentful that she's having to pick up the extra slack, and Carrie is kind of getting to be like.
And I get that, and I understand where Maggie's at, but I'm like, fucking petty. Like, and it's a kid that you're. What you're doing to that kid, though, in that moment is you are creating. I almost feel like, you know, there's times where, as a parent, like, you know, I say one thing and, you know, dad says another, and it's like,
it feels like she could
have this.
It feels like she could be a bigger person for the sake of the child.
Yes. And I feel like in that moment, she's not.
Her sort of desire to be seen as the good guy to Franny, you know, and make Carrie out to be, I don't know. She is definitely, she is not calming Franny's anxieties when she could be. And I think that Carrie is definitely upset that that's happening. And yeah, it's like really fucking complicated. Clearly, you know, in the next episode promo, Maggie says, you either need to seek treatment or I'm, you know, going to start the proceedings to take legal custody of her. Like, shit is getting real. This is so fucking real right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was thinking just now.
And there's no way she's getting treatment in the middle of the
mole. There's no way. There's no way. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no way that Carrie doesn't lose custody of Franny this year. I think I put the percentage at 100%. Zero. 0% yeah. that does happen.
Oh, I mean, yeah, 100% right, that's yes, happening. Exactly. I agree. Yeah, but, for sure.
You know, we did just kind of see all this Franny custody CPS drama last year. And I wonder, like so many other things that happened in season six, if they didn't write that and then were kind of like, it kind of got away from them. And then they decided to write one thing that maybe they didn't intend. Like maybe they always intended in season seven for this to happen because they needed to get Franny out of the picture for season eight if they wanted to go back overseas. Maybe they always needed that to happen. And like, we know a lot of stuff that sort of occurred, you know, at or before the midway point of season six that was like, didn't, you know, they sort of were on a very sort of, I don't know, the train veered way off track last year. And I wonder if that kind of got away from them in a way that they weren't anticipating. And then they kind of had to roll with the punches. And, you know, because like in the timeline of the show, all the CPS drama literally happened like 4 to 6 weeks ago. Like it wasn't like a year ago, you know, like it was like that recent. And so which makes it feel a little bit more bizarre. You're like, Carrie, like you lost your kid to Child Protective Services 4 weeks ago. Like you'd think that she'd be making a little bit more of an effort to prevent that
Quinn's
from happening.
Been dead. Quinn's been dead. We figured what, 10 weeks.
Yeah. Ish. So I think so. It's like early to mid April right now. And Quinn died.
So she's probably had Franny back for 2 months then.
Right. Not a long time for this to be a problem yet again, but anyways. All right. So, that was a really good discussion. Man.
Stresses.
Yeah. Well, it's stressful. Like,
and it's going to be ongoing, which is like really something that's like dreading. Yeah, I'm dreading.
It's going to be
like, this is only getting worse. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
The process of Carrie losing Franny is going to be excruciatingly painful. Well, for me at least, I think it's going to be painful to watch because she made.
We want so much better for her than she's capable of now.
Exactly.
And it's hard to reconcile that. Yeah, for sure.
It's gonna be really painful.
I really need to get more wine. I'm gonna need to buy I'm gonna have to go buy those boxes of wine and just like. I need a keg of wine.
I started drinking wine this past Sunday at like 4. It did not help. It was not helpful. It was still like,
oh, God.
God. Because I couldn't get drunk enough where like I couldn't actually concentrate in the episode. So you can't get drunk like that drunk. Maybe you could drink one after. So sometimes that's helpful.
God.
All right. Let's talk about Saul this week. I know that. Okay. So for the past like 4 years, I've just been banging the drum incessantly that Saul is a garbage person. I hate him. He's horrible. And just last week you were like, I like Saul. And I know you've had a little bit of what I'm calling a come to Jesus moment. So you talk about that.
Man, fuck Saul. Fucks all. So I am, I admitted to it. I admitted to this on an earlier podcast, but like, man, I kind of like Saul. I've always liked Saul, even though he fucks up. Like, I take pleasure in it. But like, I truly have always liked him and Carrie's relationship and the ebb and flow of it. And when they're on screen together, I definitely, I enjoy when they're working together. I liked. After that twist of I liked season two between them. And then I really liked after it's revealed kind of what's been going on in season three. I like up until, is it the Red Wheelbarrow, mm-hmm. I think. Like there was a few episodes there where I was like, yeah, this is getting good again. And then when they're back in the ops room, you know, towards the end of three. And then, I don't know, I like them together. And I've always enjoyed that. So But the real change for me, and I've talked about this for ages now, it was the scene in 512 with him and Ivan, where I got a better sense of kind of how he sees Carrie and treats her, which I think really enhanced my viewing of him, because then I felt like I just saw him through a different lens. So anyway, I was a little salty when he gets out of prison and doesn't make the fucking first phone call to her. Like, hey, what's up? Yo, I'm out and I'm going to work for Keen, but it's cool because I'm going to get everyone freed. There's no fucking phone call there. She finds out about it on the news from Bill, who is so gleeful to tell her. And then, like, next thing you know, like, when she calls him last episode, he's like, yeah, take a message. So that pissed me off. But then when he sees her, he's all like, hey, babe, you okay? You good? And I'm like, fuck this dude. Because then come this week, he doesn't trust her and he's going behind her back and all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, this is like, quote, your Carrie. This is the Carrie that you fucking in season 5 begged to come work for you, like with carte blanche. Kind of, you know, opportunity and leeway to do write her own missions and do all kinds of shit. Like, that was season 5. You know what I mean? That wasn't all that fucking long ago.
A year
and then
ago,
in season
in
6.
The timeline of the show.
Yeah, in the timeline.
Less than a year
and
ago.
Not only that, but like season 6, even though she's kind of rebuffed him and was secretly working for the president, like, she was fucking right with what was going on there. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah. Yes, I totally know what you mean. Like, the thing that
he
I
calls
really,
her in season yeah. 6 to, like, get, look what's happening. I'm going to jail. And that's where she's like, oh, shit. So, like, I don't understand why all of a sudden he's like, I don't trust you.
I have so many issues with this.
Like, I'm pissed. I mean, petty. I'm so petty about it.
You're preaching to the choir for sure. The main issue I have with Saul
is
he's so fucking self-righteous. Like, the things you describe, he's just like, I don't trust you anymore. Like, okay. It's just like, I'm sorry. It's just like word salad for me because I'm going to get worked up about it. But like, I don't trust you anymore. I feel like the show wants us to be like, yeah, don't trust Carrie. But like, what the fuck? She brought you the intel about Dante. She's the reason why you have him there in the next room. And like the only reason, like the only way right now that you have the ability to stop Simone's testimony, which she also brought you that as well. Like, I'm a little bit kind of like, Saul can go fuck himself. He's just,
yep.
I don't know. I mean, this is how I've been feeling since season 3 when I feel like he just uses her. He uses and abuses her. And the thing that really makes it worse for me is that I feel like Carrie just takes it and he makes her feel like she deserves it. Like, they're like, Carrie's definitely, look, she's not a saint by any means. She fucks up frequently and often and makes bad decisions, and she shouldn't have slept with Dante and all this other stuff. But like, I feel like it should go both ways and it doesn't. It's always just Saul being like, oh, Carrie, you disappointed me and all this stuff. Like, did he fucking forget that she saved his fucking life in season 4 when he got kidnapped by the Taliban because he is just that dumb? Like, what the fuck? This is so ridiculous. And I don't know. Now I'm like ranting, but I just feel like he is really petty and really vindictive. And, you know, something that really frames the way that I think about their relationship. So, like, you think about it as him being, like, her
handler.
Mm-hmm. And kind of they have, like, a asset case officer type of relationship. I think that's actually, like, I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. Jacob Clifton, who used to write recaps for television without – Petty, these really, really wonderfully funny and moving and insightful recaps. He did them for seasons 2 and 3. But in The Choice, he wrote this beautiful, beautiful recap talking about how Saul believed that he and Carrie were the same. He believed that, and in this way, he believed that they would sacrifice themselves in whatever way possible for the sake of the mission. And so if that meant that Saul's marriage failed, then so be it. If that meant that Carrie would have to spend 4 weeks in a mental institution, so be it. But it's basically you sacrifice your life. You sacrifice so many important moments that we think of in the progression of like a personal, rich, fulfilled life for the CIA, because that is paramount and that's the most important thing. And it sort of culminates in this, you know, fight that they have in the halls of the CIA where he says, "You cannot be with Brody. This is your life." And she says, "Well, maybe I want more than that. And maybe I don't want to be alone like you." And he says, "You're the smartest and the dumbest fucking person." And it's talking about like how I'll find the quote because I'm basically paraphrasing and yet butchering at the same time. But it's like Saul resented Carrie for daring to go and like find another path, you know, when she decided to choose Brody, or, you know, when she decided to have a kid. And she's like, we have never seen Saul and Franny in a scene together. That is extremely purposeful. Like, that's intentional. Oh, for sure. He doesn't think that it was right. It has nothing to do with, I think, that the kid is Brody's. It has to do with the fact that Carrie made this decision that, like, pulled her away from the CIA and, like, decided to, like, give more of herself to another person than to the agency. And, you know, she hasn't really been back since. Like yeah. I think that it's extremely significant that they've never shared a scene when, you know, supposedly Carrie, you know, like, views him as a father figure. He doesn't reciprocate that, I think. And like, he can't handle the fact that she would dare to dream of, like, a life beyond the CIA and a life beyond, like, fighting terrorism. And I think that informs their entire relationship in seasons 5 and 6, and even season 3 a little bit. But, like, season 5 and 6, he's, like, he can't handle the fact that, like, she might have moved on. He can't
handle her anymore.
So well, that's yeah, where the handler that part is comes too. In. Is like, I guess what it just feels like is it just feels like she's on the end of this, like, abusive relationship where he continues to treat her like shit. And she's just like, oh, you're right, but, like, forgive me. It's like, fuck off, Saul. Like, I just can't handle it. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, he's insufferable. He's the worst. I'm really upset this week with him because it's, you know, for me,
I feel like she
I do think, though, with Franny, I will say the only point to what you just said, I do think that it's part that it was Brody's. I really do. I think that's for sure part of it for him. I think it's like, to him, like, he will always be the guy in a suicide vest.
Yeah.
And
I think Brody's a factor, but I think it's, I also think he just resented the fact that she had a kid.
I don't think that he resents that she had a kid. I think she resents that she had Brody's kid. I think there's more tied up in it being about Brody than maybe you realize. And I do think that part, you know, because, like, that was the big wedge between them, is that she
that's
was
just really
she had made
up,
that
though.
Choice.
Like, that's
she had
really
made the
up.
Choice
I'm
to
sorry.
Leave.
Like,
well, he
I
says
know.
To her, like, when he offered in season 2 before the bombing and stuff, and he's going to bury Abu Nazir at sea, and she's staying behind, and
right, he says he's always going to be the man in a suicide.
Yeah,
bed. But like, that's
and honestly,
really just
that
like
was,
he's
that's
just like
where
a,
their relationship
oh,
was
God.
Broken.
Like, think about like Quinn. Like, Quinn versus Saul. Quinn didn't like Brody any more than Saul did, but Quinn embraced Franny because Franny was Carrie's daughter. I always feel well, like,
yeah, but you know what? Too the other thing with Quinn. Yes, that's true. I agree with that. But with Quinn and the difference between Quinn and Saul was, Quinn had a moral code, truthfully, that I think compared to those two was like impeccable. Like,
yeah.
He believed there were lines, and he believed that, you know, like, when he's telling Carrie, like, that kid is a gift and stuff like that, like, he's speaking from experience. Like, he doesn't want Carrie to have the life he had or to not have this relationship with her kid because he knows what that feels like, that he didn't have one with his. And, you know, even with Saul, he was just like, Saul, she's on her own now, you know, and the I think it's the yoga play episode. Mm-hmm. And Saul's like, she's always been on her own. And
right,
it's so
exactly, because that's
the way Saul
that's
delivers
how,
it.
That's how Saul wants it to be. He wants Carrie to be as alone as possible, because if Carrie reaches out and forms these sorts of relationships, like, with other people,
he can't handle her. Right. He wants her. He wants to be able. He wants her to be maintain his grip on her.
Isolated. Yeah.
And as right.
He wants her to be as isolated as possible and to have as few things in her life that are good as possible, because.
Well, and she's almost there. So they'll be working together any day now.
Well, I think too, like,
all of the tentacles are being snapped off left and right. She has Quinn's gone.
He kind of sees her in his image. He brought her up. He, you know, raised her professionally.
He sees her for what she could be.
I think that he is just resentful when she shows signs of taking a different path. And I think that, you know, related to this episode at least, him going in, you know, to the apartment, like, it felt a little bit like a punishment. And, like, he was...
Oh, he was shaming her.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And that's why we got an ask about that, too. Do we think that the explicit nudity, you know, was purposeful? And what was that done to greater humiliate her?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes.
For sure.
100%. She has never been, like, as naked and as raw and as stripped bare emotionally and physically as she was at the end of this episode.
And she, like, the look on her face, I mean, it worked.
Yes.
The look on her face at the end was shame and embarrassment and guilt. Like, that was by design.
Yes.
So, fuck him. I think we now both agree on that.
Saul train. Yeah.
All right, let's talk really quickly. Now, because the other sort of big storyline that we haven't talked about was, like, this Keen Wellington stuff. So Saul goes over to Wellington's house at the beginning of the day and says, I have to talk to you. And he reveals kind of what he knows about Simone and the fact that she is working for the Russian government. And Wellington looks shell-shocked as I've ever seen anyone else. And he later then writes, like, three letters, we think. There were three, right?
It looks like it, yeah.
Three letters to Keen, all in the same envelope. Three different versions of basically a resignation letter. The first one being, I resign my post effective immediately. No other details. The second one giving a little bit more details kind of about what Saul had told him. And the third one being a potential love declaration, which is so bananas. Like, what the fuck? He talks about how he never had any true feelings for Simone and it was a relationship of convenience, and how he's kind of, you know, laying down on the sword now in order to save her. And she comes over and she's like, what is this? Like, it seems like it's kind of caught her off guard. But she was also like, I don't accept this and I won't allow you to resign. Like, what the fuck is happening between them? Do we think that their relationship wasn't sexual? Right? Like, I don't think that they've had sex. Like, I don't think that that's what it was. It feels like maybe he's had these, like, secret feelings for her.
I don't know. I feel like we're 60% through that novel.
Right,
I have
exactly.
no idea what's going on.
What is going on?
I was so confused out of left at first.
That I was like, what is happening?
Well, it kind of does make a little bit of sense in context, where was it two, three episodes ago where she says to him, like, I didn't bring you here to be my girlfriend, you know?
Maybe he was being a little bit too, you know.
I think she was putting him in his place. Mm. I think that maybe that's why he's gotten away with some things, like calling the generals and her showing up at his house. Like, I think maybe now we're seeing some more context to that maybe we didn't understand.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have the big picture later on.
Because Carrie thought it was weird, too, because remember they were listening in and she was like, he just said all this weird stuff about her being, you know, like the future and how he'd always believed in her. And she thought that was weird. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It was
Well,
just
I kind
so
of thought
bizarre.
It was weird. I remember on a podcast kind of being like, I think he's playing her a little bit there and like kissing her ass. Like,
it was,
no,
seems
I think
it was
he
genuine?
Was like straight up like in love with her.
This
but,
is so weird.
I don't know, man.
It's so,
I don't know how to read it.
Oh, man. I don't think he's playing her. He seems he seems too stupid. Like I said, I think, you know, episode 9 is called Useful Idiot. I think Wellington's the useful idiot, but it's a little bit like, what is going on? Like, he's been secretly in love with her and he writes her this letter, but he also writes two other versions of the letter. Like, what?
Well, here's me too. Like, so you had set it with the three letters because I'm like, I don't fucking get it. And then you were like, well, the first one is the public one. Mm-hmm. It's the public resignation. The second one where he's describing like what Saul has told him and why he's doing it, that's for the staff and the advisors. And the third one where he's like, I fucking love you, man. And I think maybe that one's like the his behind the scenes, like, all right, like, if we're never going to see each other again, like, I have to tell you this.
That's oh, my God.
Say anything moment. Like, he's holding up the boom box and he's, like, outside the White House. Like,
can you imagine? Oh, my God.
Catch me outside, Keen. Catch me outside.
Like, this show is so absurd sometimes. And the president's chief of staff writing a kind of, like, secret love letter to the president – and then her being like, what the fuck is this, is one of the most absurd things that's ever happened on this show. And it's not even like, you know, oh, my God. It was just so weird. And I just had to talk about it to just be like, were we the only ones who were like, what the fuck? Like, it's mm-hmm. just so out of left field in the most extreme way. And I was
yeah, you gotta wonder what they're doing with that, because
yeah,
I was trying
like
to,
what's the point of it?
Because I was like, that's always my question is like, what's the context, right? And then I was like, oh shit, is he gonna die, or you know, or is she gonna die or something? Because like, you know, like if this were a horror movie and he just like declared his love for her, like he's definitely gonna die, right? Like there's no like culmination there.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe like
he's doomed. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe.
He's doomed.
Maybe the letter is, you know, leaked or something. Maybe the letter is leaked and then it's used as like a scandal or something, and it's how she gets kicked out of, like, maybe she survives, you know, the Senate investigation and all the Russia stuff, and like what actually brings her down is like Wellington's love declaration, and people think that they've been having some sort of secret affair. That would be fucking funny.
God.
Like that would
I
be
could see that. Yeah.
That would be like ironic, kind of in the most mm-hmm. Homelandian way. I kind of hope that happens now. So absurd, and Wellington is so dumb. Oh God, he's just as like. He just seems a little bit like, you know, he's like the town idiot to me, you know, like the dunce. There's like, he's so stupid.
He's a patsy.
He's a patsy for sure. He is mm-hmm. a pawn in this game. All right.
Yeah, and he's not even a good one. Like, he's just like a pawn. Like, he's not even a bishop or a rook.
He's like the one that you sacrificed at the very beginning of the game.
Yeah, he's the first pawn.
Right. He's the first one to die. And he actually might be the first one to die. All right. Mm-hmm. So I think that we had a little game that you'd prepared too for.
Yeah, just real quick. Like it's this episode was super awkward. So my questions will be like, what's more awkward, this or that?
Okay.
So what's more awkward? finding out you were fucking a Russian mole? Or finding out that the guy that was fucking the Russian mole had a secret crush on you.
I'm going to say.
That might cost you your entire job and future, by the way.
I'm going to say it's more awkward to find out that the guy who was fucking a Russian mole has a secret crush on you. Because it's like, those, like, what does that make me, right? Like, if the guy who was fucking the Russian mole wants to be fucking me. What does that say about me?
Well, that's a wake-up call.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Awkward.
That is a re-examine your life choices, girlfriend, moment.
Okay, what's more awkward? Your boss hearing you have sex or your boss walking in on you after the FBI has just raided and you in the middle of
okay.
your sex?
Okay. Are we talking about just in general or within the context of both of those things occurring on this show?
Whichever you're more comfortable answering, okay. Either one sounds pretty awkward.
I think that having I think that it's more awkward to listen to sex because Carrie's sex noises are really awkward to listen to. And I always just, you know, sort of within the context of the show, I'm thinking about like in 208 when that actually happens. That was so fucking awkward because Saul was like, just give her time, you know, like this is okay, we can listen to this. And they turn the volume up louder and he's like face palming. I mean, it's such a great moment, but it is incredibly awkward. But I always think about the production that went behind making that scene occur. Like, did Claire and Damien like go to the sound booth and like record the sex noises together, or like was that like I don't know.
I would hope that would be, if I was an actress, like, I would want that separate.
The other, or, okay, separate or apart.
But who goes first?
Like, but also, like, oh, I don't know. And, like, the other thing is, like, when they were filming that, did they put in the voice, or, like, did they have the sounds, like, while they were filming that, or was that added in after? And if it was, like, I don't know. If, like, oh, I don't know. I definitely think it's more awkward to have your boss listening to you have sex and just walk in after. Though both are awkward. What do you think?
Oh, God. I mean, I don't know. I know, like, this one was more humiliating this time, probably because it was the second time it's happened, basically. But I think that first one, the listening part was, like,
it's definitely more awkward.
Yeah, it's, and then it was like, especially like in the context of the show when like Quinn walks over and like turns
the volume up. Yeah, exactly.
Goodness, not great. But when, like, you know, in this episode, the heat signatures, I mean, there's like no, like, they know exactly what's going on. Ugh, that's like infrared porn.
That's going to be the title of this podcast episode, infrared porn. Oh, no, we might get flagged.
Okay, so I've got one more. Okay, so what's more awkward, the FBI raiding the shack that you're staying at, racing to your mom who's naked, or when you're an adult realizing that when the FBI raided the shack you were staying in, that your mom was naked?
Oh, without a doubt, it's the second one. Franny's too young to understand what it means that her mom was naked. She's not old enough to understand. I'm imagining Franny, who's going to have to go through intense psychotherapy beginning in, like, 4 days.
Can you imagine those bills?
Like, intense psychotherapy. She's probably too young to really remember, but it also might be, like, even if she does remember, she's about the age where you start to form memories. Even if she does remember, she's going to probably repress it. And I'm imagining her in, like, 15 years, like, sitting in her therapist's office and, like, talking about her mother. Who knows how that conversation is going to go, but just being, like, but just, like, having sort of remembered that that happened and then realizing, oh, my God, my mom was naked. Oh, my God, what, like, does that mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, my God, I was sleeping in the next bedroom, and oh, my God, and oh, my God, and it's definitely more awkward for the second one.
Yeah, and I mean, like, to that is, like, the other realizations, like, she's going to have is, what's more awkward, that your father was a terrorist or that he wasn't the only one that your mom was involved with?
Oh my God. Like, if, like, we talk about Carrie having, like, mommy issues, Franny's mommy issues are gonna, like, blow hers out of the park. Like, oh my sure. God, that child is gonna be, she needs a therapist soon,
ASAP.
Yeah, ASAP.
Yesterday.
Oh man. Poor Franny.
Oh God, poor Franny.
Everyone on this show needs a fucking therapist. I'm a sucker, but I'm not a loser.
What you think about me? It's all love. Smile.